Now, adjust the volume control so that the sound can be heard in all parts of the room.
This is the Protect Your Assets podcast.
Mr. Sandman,
you get the idea?
Bring me a dream.
It's on the internet.
Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
Go on.
Give him two lips like roses and clover.
It's a great program.
And tell him that his lonesome nights are over, Sandman.
What is it?
It's exactly what I need.
It's a slam dunk.
It's great.
It's like no cheese I've ever tasted.
Please turn on your magic beat.
Here he comes.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a key.
Here's David Hollander.
If you think about it, one of the biggest assets you're going to transfer to your family will be your house or maybe one of your rental properties. But how does Proposition 19 correspond with Proposition 60? Or what about the parent-to-child exclusion of Proposition 58? Well, this morning, this controversial subject we're going to be talking about. We're going to be walking through all the questions and fact patterns that you've brought to me the last few weeks. I think it's really important we talk about this as a group. So if you have a question about your real estate or your property, you're definitely going to want to hear this show this morning. So stay tuned as we get into Prop 19 and what you need to know as a California resident. Good morning. This is Protect Your Assets. I'm David Hollander. If you're just joining us for the first time, welcome. You hear the jingle. People around here, they call me the Sandman. And that's because I help my listeners sleep well at night by answering their most troubled legal or financial questions every single week. And if you have a question, give us a call, 808-5627. You know the number, 808-KNBR. I am a financial advisor. And most importantly, when we talk about this subject, an attorney. It's incredible how many people out there are practicing law without a license. Shouldn't be, but in any event, I am an attorney and we will be talking about that this morning. I've been doing this for almost 30 years. So what about Proposition 19? You know, it passed here in California by just about 51% of the voters. So it was a very controversial bill, barely passed last November, and it went operative February 16th of this year in 2021. And there's another date you have to know, which is April 1st of this year. And so there's lots of questions. How does this apply? How does it affect these old propositions that were out there before, like Proposition 60, Proposition 58, Prop 110? There's so many propositions in California, but unfortunately, Prop 19 was a constitutional change, and this is it now. So if you're thinking about passing your real estate, whether it be your home or your rental property to your children, then you really need to listen to this morning. Even if you have a trust, you're probably not protected. So you need to know all about this. So stay with us as we get into this very important subject. Now let's get started. Markets this week were up again. The Dow was up 0.8%, S&P up 0.9%. NASDAQ up 1.1. The 10-year rose a little bit to 131. And oil still up there around $68 a barrel. So this week we had some announcements from Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs said the S&P 500 for the year should get to 4,700. So still some room to go. That helped markets a little bit this week. But like we've been talking about cyclical sectors, remember, in an inflationary environment, how cyclical sectors and value is where you want to be. Well, cyclical sectors led the market higher this week as earnings once again and commentary from CEOs about travel and leisure offset the negative Delta virus headlines, which continue to roll out. Financials particularly rose about 1.31%, energy up over 1%, and the leaders of the rally, which started on Thursday, were sparked by the get out and spend names like Wynn, Carnival Cruise, BKNG. These are all up more than 5% on positive earnings and commentary and guidance from the CEOs. So as the Delta variant continues to surge, doesn't seem like leisure plans are derailed at all. So this is what's fascinating, because the reality of what's going on right now, you understand what's happening. There's a dichotomy right now in the market. The media headlines of COVID are awful. And there's warnings and mixed messages about vaccine effectiveness, hospitalization, virus trends. But when you look at contrast to the market, that negative outlook is not affecting the travel and the leisure space. According to the executives, as they were reporting this past week, they were saying it's a totally different picture than what the headlines are saying. And so ultimately, that could change if the COVID cases continue to surge and people have to abandon. Remember last year you had to give up your travel plans, and in a lot of cases you lost your money. Yet for right now, the businesses in the get out and spend categories continue to surge, even though we have these gloomy headlines. And that is a distinction that you need to be aware of. So if you're invested in those sort of stocks, or you're thinking about getting into those as they continue to surge ahead, you know, be careful, because if we're going to follow the UK's example, remember, we probably won't see this peak until later this month, early September. And if we don't turn the course, who knows what's going to happen. Next question I've been getting a lot about is this thing called stagflation. That just sounds so interesting, doesn't it? You may remember from your economics class, these topics, I remember they were just boring, frankly, and I didn't really understand what the heck are they talking about. So there's this thing called stagflation, and the question right now is stagflation possible? Because right now we know inflation is elevated, certainly higher. You can sense it whenever you buy anything at the store or at the Home Depot, etc. Everything's so much more expensive. Just to have work done in your house, it's expensive. That's inflation, period. That's what it is. So if the economy starts to slow down, which certainly is possible with all the news we see coming out, and unemployment remains high, which it still is, well, what can the Fed do? If they raise rates, that's not going to help. And that's what stagflation is. And that's where the economy just grinds to a halt, and there's not much that central banks can do about it. So we have to watch for this over the next couple of months, because that's serious. And here's how it could happen. There's a couple scenarios how this could happen. So these are things you could pay attention to. We're certainly watching it. But first, when you look at the central banks around the world, it seems like they're committed to reducing the stimulus regardless of what's happening in COVID or in the economy. And what I mean by that is this was reinforced this last week by the Bank of England, where they followed the same pattern that the Fed recently did, that the ECB recently did, the Bank of Canada, the Reserve Bank of Australia. All of them had a chance to be more dovish in their discussion about interest rates and where they saw things going, but none of them did. And as you know, the Fed, we talked last week, they took another step last week towards raising rates. They haven't done it yet, but their language is changing. And same with the ECB. They changed their inflation target, but failed to explain how that actually changes anything. So this is now a global situation that's occurring. And while I doubt any of them are going to say it, any of these central banks are going to say it, it appears globally that central bankers want to ease off accommodation, easy money at a minimum sooner than later. Because if they do that, then they feel that that's going to help slow things down. But undoubtedly, the spike we're seeing in inflation here locally, and I'm sure it's also globally, that is something that is going to reduce the desire to do that. So we just have to keep watching it and see what happens. But the important takeaway for you this morning is that they may well continue to reduce the accommodation, even if Delta spikes or the recovery slows. And if that does, that's stagflation, and that's something we need to get ready for when it comes to your portfolio. Second, higher inflation. Well, it's here. And like we talked about last week, they were saying, well, it was temporary. I don't know. I think inflation's a little bit more sticky than temporary. I don't think it's just going to disappear. And I think that's in part due to the ongoing supply chain distributions. If you talk to anybody who's in production right now, who's making things, they can't get things to finish the product they're trying to get you. So that means that things are sitting around like cars. And so when these things are not able to be sold, that's a problem. And that drives prices higher because there's less supply. And so over the next few months, if we see the Delta variant cause a slowdown and the Fed's reluctant to delay tapering due to inflation, well, that's again the definition of stagflation, and that will scare the market, and that could cause a correction in stock. So Markets haven't been afraid lately, as we've been saying, of this economic slowdown that appears to be out there. And that's because the Fed for years has always been able to rescue us by rate cuts or quantitative easing. But what's really scary about this situation we're in right now is that the Fed won't or can't ride to the rescue for fear of creating more inflation. And so that's why stagflation is bad, and that's why we have to keep watching it. Bottom line, I haven't had inflation in over a decade to the rate that we're seeing right now. So there's been zero stagflation risk, but that's changing right now. And you can certainly count on me to watch the growth closely. And if rollover looks like it's starting to happen, well, of course, we'll tell you during this market segment that we do every week. Next week, again, we're going to have some more inflation information come out, so we'll be paying attention to that. You got labor costs and, of course, all the other surveys that we watch. We'll be bringing you that news next week. Now, when we come back, the question is, how does Proposition 19 affect your real estate? If you're thinking about leaving your property to your children, or if your trust says that, you need to know about this because things have changed. And unless you've made some corrections or some updates to your paperwork, bottom line is your kids are going to end up paying a lot more tax. Find out what this is and how it works and what you need to know. It's all coming up next. You're listening to The Sandman on the Protect Your Assets Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Everybody does, yeah, that's okay, yeah. So slide.
You can ask The Sandman questions and hear this show, Protect Your Assets, hands-free, anytime on your Amazon Echo smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast. Find out more at libertygroupllc.com/voice.
Now, back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, The Sandman.
I need you tonight.
Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as The Sandman, and you're listening to Protect Your Assets this morning. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about. This Proposition 19, I don't know if you've heard about this before, but if you own real estate and you're planning on leaving it to your children, if that's what your trust says, whether it's your primary residence or a rental property, the bottom line is this Proposition 19 has a big effect on how much taxes your family is going to end up paying. So this morning we're going to talk about this. We had a number of experiences we've had lately, so I just figured I'd just share them with you this morning. So let's start out with what Proposition 19 is, how it came into effect, all the different implications of it. In any event, let's talk about it. So what is Proposition 19? Well, on November 3rd last year, it was on our ballot. And I don't know if you remember reading about it. I do. I remember some parts of it. But I had no idea that it had all this effect, which it's now looking like it's replaced all sorts of things. And when you call the local assessor's office to get any help, well, they're confused. So how are you supposed to know what to do? Good question. So in any event, this was approved by 51% of the population, so it was very close, and it went effective on December 16th. But then in order when it became operative and applied to transactions, that was February 16th of this year, and then for the base year value transfer provisions, which we're going to talk about this morning, those went effective on April 1st this year. So there's a lot of moving dates and deadlines floating around, and there's a lot of questions about, well, how does this apply to me? And what if I did a sale before this? And what if I'm buying something new later? I mean, there's a lot of good questions. So we're going to talk about that. And I'm just going to give you a situation where a client of ours had said, you know, can you look into this for me? And sure, absolutely, this is what we do. So, you know, go ahead and we call the county assessor's office of the particular county to explain what we're trying to do. This person is over 55 years old, so part of this legislation was affecting people who are over 55 who are considering selling their primary residence, because let's face it, right now you've got a ton of equity in that real estate, and maybe you're thinking about moving to another part of the state to be closer to family, or maybe just cash out and pay less for something new and have a different lifestyle. We have lots of clients moving around doing these sort of things. So we're very familiar with the taxes. As you know, we have tax personnel on our staff, and we're attorneys, and we do financial business as well. So we look at these issues, and we had a lot of clients who've been doing this, who've been selling their properties and have been moving and have wondered how their taxes will be calculated. Well, when you think back, when you bought your property, say back in the 70s or the 80s or even the 90s, you probably paid a lot less than it's worth today. And under Proposition 13, the tax you pay, the tax basis you pay, is basically pretty low. And it grew at around 2% per year, all those years you owned it. And so you may be paying, you know, taxes on property at a much lower level. And so the question comes up, well, what if you sell that property and move to a new, more expensive property in California? Or what if you leave that property to your children? You know, what's going to happen? And that's the issue surrounding all of this. So that's where this started. That's where this conversation started. This particular client had already sold their primary residence, had already purchased a new residence that was more money, and wanted to know how this affected. So we went ahead and we called the county. And as we were going through the process, which this morning I want to help you do this. So pull out a pad of paper right now. Start writing some things down. This is a very fact intensive. These are things you need to look up for yourself if you're going to try and do this yourself. I would caution you that I would recommend you get with an attorney who understands the issues around this and who can ask you questions about your situation and what you're trying to accomplish. Because in their defense, the government workers at the counties, even though they may be in the valuation department of the assessor's office and presumably know what they're doing, they're trying to figure this stuff out too, because this is brand new law and it's in conflict with several other laws that have been out there for multiple years. So they're confused. And when you go to your particular county's website, so that's where you want to start. I'm just trying to be easy this morning. Start at your county that you're in or you're going to. Look at their website. Go to the assessor's section of the website. And in the assessor section, there should be a forms area where it will outline what I'm talking about this morning. And so the first thing that you're going to see is all sorts of different change of ownership, disaster relief, exclusions. And that's where Prop 58 comes in. You'll see the parent and child exclusion. That's been around forever. Well, this changed that. So this Prop 58, the BOE, the Bureau of Equalization, they have forms that they give to the counties with certain information they want to collect. And so you'll see the form there. This particular form for Prop 58 was BOE 58. And there's different types. There's a parent-to-child exclusion. There's a grandparent-to-grandchild exclusion. There's an affidavit of continent residency. So this is all part of Prop 58. Now, Prop 60, you may remember Prop 60 just from a couple years ago. Remember, that was if you were 55 years or older and you wanted to transfer your base year value to your new replacement dwelling. This was mainly passed for seniors who were thinking about moving to other counties in California. And you may remember with this one, and this is where 60 is different than 19. And this is why 19, I think, may be better in many situations, is 60 required that the county that you were going to be moving to accept the transfer basis. They didn't have to, remember? They didn't have to. They had to participate in that program. And if they didn't, you were stuck. So you could apply, you could try, maybe you were approved, maybe you were denied. But the reality is it wasn't mandatory. Proposition 19 is mandatory. So every state in California, I'm sorry, every county in California must approve the base value. And that's so important. As we talk through this morning, you'll see why that number really becomes very valuable to you if you're considering doing this. So when you go again to this section on the website, you'll see the BOE 60 form. And I would encourage you to look at that. In fact, when we were having the conversation with the worker in this county this past week, and I had the conversation personally with this person, they didn't know. They directed me towards 60, when in reality 19 was a far better result for our client, and they didn't know that. And so this is the sort of misinformation that you're going to come across as you try and go down this road. So when you go to the same form section, you'll see that there's many BOE 19s. There's a 19P, a 19G, a 19B, a 19D, a 19DC. you know, which one's right for you? Good question. So that depends on the facts. In this particular case, the BOE 19B is the one that I'm going to compare to the BOE 68. So in this particular case, the 19 was a better result for this particular client. Why? Because first of all, their basis value, the value of the property that they sold, and this sale occurred in 20. It doesn't matter, by the way, because as long as there's a new replacement after Prop 19 became effective, or there was construction on the new property completed after that date, then you're in good shape. And we'll walk through how that works here in a minute. But again, these are some of the questions and issues that you have to go through as you fill out this form. Now, if you look at the 60 form, that is county specific. So in this particular case, if the client was moving to another county where they didn't accept it, then they would be denied. But under Prop 19, they wouldn't. So in this case, this particular client could save quite a bit of money. What am I talking about specifically? Well, let's get into some numbers. Let's assume that your original home was sold for a cash value of $400,000, but your factored base year value, and this is where these terms are important, you need to understand what these mean. The factored base year value was $100,000 at the time of sale. Now, if this client went and replaced their home for a new home that had a cash value of $600,000, the difference between 600 and 400 is 200,000. That's right, you got it right. So how do you figure out what the tax should be? Well, here's how it works. The $600,000 new purchase price of the home, the replacement home, you subtract the full cash value of the sale price, the $400,000, and then you add that to the base year value of $100,000. That's how that works. So in this particular case, the replacement home is going to have a new, again, and this is if the county accepts it, a new base year value of $300,000. So they were at $100,000 under the old Prop 13, old residence, all the step-ups of the 2% each particular year. Now they have a $200,000 difference. So you add that to the 100, and now you're looking at $300,000. $300,000 is still better than $600,000. So in this particular case, this client will not be paying annual taxes on that $300,000. Now it can get even bigger. So what if the property is several million dollars? Because as you know, in the Bay Area, we have multiple properties right now. 2 million kind of seems like an average number for a lot of properties, doesn't it? So if you're looking at, you know what I'm talking about. So the value limit under Prop 19, this is important. It is the sum of the factored base year value, like I just went through with you, plus $1 million. Now, I know you may be saying right now, well, how does this work? I don't understand this. This is confusing. We have a podcast. You can always go back and listen to the show at pyaradio.com. Again, listen to the podcast at PYA Radio so you can start to understand what it is I'm talking about here. Now, let's get back to the $1 million exclusion. So the way this works is if the market value exceeds the $1 million limit, you only get partial relief. And again, let me walk you through an example of how this might affect you if you have a home that's worth, say, several million dollars. Okay, so let's say that your family home right now has a factored, and again, I'm gonna keep using this word, the base year value. It's really important you understand what that means. I'll explain it to you. Let's say you live in a home right now in Los Altos, and your home is worth $1.5 million. Your fair factored base year value is $300,000. Well, why is that? Well, let's say you bought that house in the Los Altos Hills back in 1997. And in 1997, you paid $200,000 for it. And since then, you made some improvements on the property. And since then, Proposition 13 has been ratcheting up your tax basis value at 2% per year all those years. Well, that's how you got to the $300,000 base year value. It's the value you see on your tax statement that you get each year that you pay your taxes on. When you sell that property, today's fair market value is $1.5 million. Well, that's going to be another value that we're going to use as part of this total calculation. So when I talk about the $1 million exclusion, how does it work under the formula? Here's how it works. The excluded amount that's under Proposition 19 is as follows. Your base year value was $300,000. You get $1 million from Prop 19. So 1.3 is now the amount. If you sell the property in Los Altos for $1.5 million, well, the difference is as follows. $1.5 million minus $1.3 million is $200,000. So your adjusted base year value on the new property that you're going to buy is going to be $500,000. In other words, $300,000 of the base year value plus the $200,000 difference gets you the $500,000. So again, this is some of the insight into what you're going to deal with as you start to work through these numbers. And by the way, if you have a living trust, it has nothing to do with this. It certainly will avoid probate. And yes, currently under the current federal tax law, you can expect to get a step up in basis. But that's not it. There's more. There's more taxes to pay. Coming up next, it's time for our popular They Say segment, where they say when you pass away and your kids receive your property, you get a step up in basis and there are no other taxes to pay. Find out if that's really true. It's all coming up next. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Show with David Hollander. That's me. We'll be right back.
Now you can hear the show Protect Your Assets hands-free anytime on your smart speaker or Android device. Just say, hey Google, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast. Learn more at libertygroupllc.com/voice.
Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back to Protect Your Assets. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman, and you're listening to Protect Your Assets this morning. And we've had so many questions about this Proposition 19 that narrowly passed last November. It passed by about 51% of the vote. And it's having all sorts of reaction when you talk about the parent-to-child exclusion, grandparent-to-grandchild exclusion, reassessments of properties, selling your property here in the Bay Area and moving to another area of the state. So this is affecting a lot of people, and it's really interesting, and frankly, I'm learning quite a bit. So I love sharing this with you this morning as we talk about what's going on here with Proposition 19 in California. So now it's time for one of our fan favorite parts of our show, our They Say segment, where we debunk common myths, half-truths, and sometimes just bad advice that they say.
Who are they? What do they know that I don't? And what are they saying this week? There's only one man with all the answers. And here he is, David Hollander, the Sandman.
So here's one they say. They say that if you have a trust and you die and your kids get your house, that they don't have to pay any taxes. Is that true? Well, no, it's not true. In fact, currently, right now, the step up in basis is currently there, meaning that on the federal level, if your child were to receive your property, then they wouldn't have to pay taxes on the stepped up value. What do I mean? Let me make it simple. Let's say that you bought your house in Palo Alto and it was in 1985 and you paid $350,000 for that piece of property. And today it's worth $4 million. And you have a trust. In fact, it's a revocable, meaning you could change it, revocable living trust that upon your death and your spouse's death, if you're married, that property will pass to your oldest son, Johnny. So you both pass away and Johnny receives that property here in 2021. It's now August 7th. And Johnny gets the house, moves in the house, and he's sitting on a $4 million piece of property. Does Johnny owe taxes on the difference between the $300,000 you paid back in the 80s and the $4 million value today if he were to go and sell that property on the open market? No, he doesn't. He's going to have to pay zero tax on the capital gain. But here's where this gets interesting. The property tax, and this is the killer. This is the Prop 19 killer. This is what has destroyed Proposition 58. Remember the Proposition 58 parent-to-child exclusion that was out there? It's gone. There's now a reassessment, which means the following. If Johnny receives that property, and all you had was a revocable living trust, and now Johnny has the property, and it's worth $4 million, well, guess what? His tax basis, I'm not talking about capital gain, I'm talking about his tax basis. His tax basis will jump from the previous Prop 13 to the current fair market value of $4 million. So let's put in dollars and cents. Let's say that you were paying, based on your 1985 purchase, plus all the Proposition 13 2% increases all those years, you were paying $8,000 a year of property tax. And now Johnny receives the property. It's $4 million worth. Well, guess what? The County of Santa Clara is going to send Johnny a bill for $40,000+ per year, and he's going to have to pay taxes on that. And then Johnny, unfortunately, doesn't have a great job. So you were hoping that he could live in your house, pay the current tax, the house is paid off, pay the insurance, and he's good because you've made all the improvements and it's, the house is perfect. Well, guess what? Those plans have been dashed because unless Johnny's making $80,000 of income at least, he's going to be out on the street. Why? Because he's going to have to pay that tax. So he's going to be having to make several hundred thousand dollars a year just to stay in that property. Because, of course, he's got to pay his power bill, and he's got to pay the clothes, and he's got to pay the food and the car insurance and the phone bill and everything else that goes along with living in the Bay Area. That's bad. That's sad. It shouldn't have to be that way. So is there a way around this? Is there a way to make sure that even though you blew the February 15th deadline, because, by the way, the transfer was supposed to occur at or before February 15th, when Prop 19 applied to transfers? The answer is yes. The answer is there is still hope, but you need to talk to an attorney because only an attorney is licensed in California to help you with these sort of problems. Phone's ringing off the hook already. Only an attorney has the credentials and the training and the ability to show you how to do this. So I know if you go on the internet and you type this in, you're going to see all these, I don't want to say it, but they're not attorneys, and they're trying to get you to sell your property, to do things that will probably get you into trouble. So remember this number, 866-PROTECT, because when you get into trouble or you get a bad answer or you're not sure if they know what they're talking about, call 866-PROTECT. That's me, the Sandman. We'll help clean up the mess. That's what I do. 866-PROTECT. Now, what can you do right now? What can you do to find out if you're a parent or a grandparent and you're trying to transfer the real estate to your children now, which, by the way, might not be a bad idea because right now the federal estate tax amount is $11.7 million per person. $11.7 million per person. That could change. That could drop to 3.5. And if it does, you lose all of that ability to transfer that asset. Coming up next, there's so much more to talk about this subject. So when we come back, we're going to get into some more about the differences between Prop 19 and what you need to know. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
You can ask the Sandman questions and hear this show protect your assets hands-free anytime on your Amazon Echo smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast. Find out more at LibertyGroupLLC.com/voice.
Now, back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman, and you're listening to Protect Your Assets this morning. And isn't that name, Protect Your Assets, so relevant right now when propositions like 19 are coming out trying to tax us more on our basis of our property? We just want to give it to our kids, but now it's going to cost us more. That doesn't seem right. Or what about when the stock market's at all-time highs right now? How do you convert those assets, your real estate, your portfolio, into income that will last the rest of your life? Well, we certainly have answers for you. Now, if you're just tuning in or you're just joining us this morning, we've been speaking about this Proposition 19. This is very controversial. This barely passed by 51% of the voters last November. It is now effective. And we've been getting a lot of really good questions like the following. Is Prop 19 retroactive, and would it cause property transfers that have already received the benefit of Proposition 58? Remember that one? That was the parent to child exclusion. Could they be reassessed? The answer is no. Proposition 19 is clear that Prop 58 applies to transfers that occur on or before, this is very important, February 15, 2021. And Prop 19 applies to transfers that occur on or after February 16th, 2021. So it's really important that you understand that difference and that date. And if you have more questions around that, we're going to really get into detail about that on our webinar where we talk about that date and why that's so important. Now, what about this one? Under Proposition 19, again, these are questions you've asked and I really appreciate it, so keep them coming. Under Prop 19, if I inherit my parents' family home and move into it and establish it as my principal residence, must I live continually in the home to receive the parent-to-child exclusion? What happens if I move somewhere else? Now, this is what's interesting. When you get into these sort of questions, you'll see publicly the statement, "We believe." That's because there's some gray area out there, and that's where attorneys are valuable, because we understand what the law says, what it means, and where are the areas where you can, let's just say, make it your way. So that's a good way to put it. But in any event, that's a good question. And certainly if that's your situation, you definitely want to talk to us and figure out what are you trying to do. How about this one? Does Prop 19 apply to a transfer of a rental home? Well, that's a good question. The official answer is no. Prop 19 limits the parent-child exclusion to a transfer of a family home that is the principal residence of the transferor, also known as the parent or grandparent, and becomes the principal residence of the transferee. But let's face it, you don't fit into that little pocket, do you? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Maybe you have some other facts that you're trying to accomplish. And again, that's why it makes so much sense to talk to an attorney who can help you with this. What about this one? Will I lose the parent-child exclusion if the value of the family home is greater than $1 million? You may remember earlier I was giving the example of the home in Palo Alto that was worth $4 million. Well, I already walked through that question about how the tax calculation, which is really what you're after when you ask that question, how that's going to be calculated. And so if you missed any part of that, please go back later today or tomorrow. Our podcast will be uploaded. You can listen to my podcast anytime where we go through this, and you can put replay and listen to it over and over and over again. Go to PYA Radio, again, PYARadio.com to find out more about our podcast. I want to give a big thanks to the Protect Your Assets team for putting together a great show today. My executive producer and network manager, Kevin Renfer, and of course, all my fabulous producers back there answering the phone. You got Phil, you got Brett, you got Felicia. Thank you guys, because without my team, I'm just another pretty voice on the radio. Thanks again, everybody. You've been listening to the Protect Your Assets show. I am David Hollander, the Sandman. Go out and make the rest of your life the best of your life.
calls have been screened. Callers should not expect their conversations with David Hollander on the radio or with staff to be held in confidence, and that legal information provided on the air is not intended to be a substitute for callers hiring their own lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Proper advice depends on complete analysis of all the facts and circumstances. The information given on this program is in the nature of general financial comment and cannot be relied upon as pertaining to your specific financial situation. California Life Agent number 0B48569. Listeners should consult their own financial advisor or conduct their own due diligence before making any financial decisions. The preceding program was paid for by Liberty Group, LLC. The views and the opinions of the host do not represent those of the station or its ownership. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.